Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Why Street Newspapers? Written by Mike Jones, Vendor 113. Street newspapers are produced, purchased, and sold by the homeless and those facing poverty. These papers provide sources of income and platform to interact and build relationships in the community. Street newspapers mainly focus on topics concerning homelessness and poverty, local issues and events. Publications such as these provide communities with unique perspectives for readers on topics and issues on being unhoused and are facing financial hardship. Street newspapers are nonprofit. The community itself can be involved through volunteering their time and services. Students from various colleges and universities also do their internship at these publications. The homeless and the community at large provides the community with a wide perspective for the reader's enjoyment. Like any other publication, street newspapers provide advertising opportunities for local businesses and opportunities. These publications are a part of a street newspaper syndicate called International Network of Street Papers, INCSP, support a network of 92 street papers in 35 countries published in 25 languages, 3.2 million readers worldwide, 904 volunteers worldwide supporting our network, over 3,900,000 people in poverty supported since the first street paper was published in 1989. 5,730 vendors sell papers at any given time. 13.15 million street papers were sold across the world in 2021. 1,350 towns and cities had a street paper presence in 2021. I would like to talk about my experience as a street newspaper vendor and writer. There's an old saying, life is what you make it. This is true when working for a street paper. In the beginning, I was oblivious to the true meaning and purpose of a street newspaper and the possibilities this occupation would lead me to. Before becoming a full-time vendor at Ground Cover News, I was a cab driver for over 10 years in Ann Arbor. Being a driver and selling newspapers are a lot alike. You communicate with the public daily. That's what I like most about these two jobs. It took me some time to find my voice as a street paper vendor. After jumping in the water and getting my feet wet, I finally got my pitch down pat. Once you learn how to vibe and communicate with the public, one should have no problem making money and new friends. Just like any other job and occupation, there are a lot of ups and downs. At times, it can be like riding an emotional roller coaster. Some days are great and others are not so great. The same is true with cab driving. When things are good, I go home and reflect on a good day. When things don't go so well, I make my way home and meditate and write. Bad weather doesn't help the cause of a street newspaper vendor. The best time to sell is when the sun is shining and the weather is nice, at least tolerable. There are other financial opportunities within the publication structure in the means of writing, recording, workshops, and through different public engagements. I find this very helpful in two ways. First, it helps make ends meet. And second, it allows vendors to explore their creative inner self. I like to write and street newspaper allow all voices to be heard. That's one of the many special things about these publications. By becoming a street newspaper vendor or participant, you won't get rich anytime soon, but you will find yourself engaged in a way with your fellow vendors and communities that surpass any purchase, monetary donation, or gift. By becoming a street paper vendor, I landed on the greatest ship that ever sailed, friendship.
Hello, I'm Jose Hill, ground cover vendor, number 532. I'm going to read from the issue of May 31st, 2024. My article is titled Michigan Tennis Update and Eastern Michigan Baseball. Michigan Women's Tennis, May 11th, Michigan versus Miami. Michigan was victorious 4-0. Player highlight, Jaden Brown and Carrie Miller played women's doubles and they won 6-1. May 17th, Michigan versus Pepperdine. Michigan came up short and lost 1-4. Player highlight, Carrie Miller played well to start, but fell off and lost both sets. On the other hand, Miller will be participating in the NCAA Singles Championship. Let's wish her luck. Go, Carrie Miller. Listen to head coach Ronnie Bernstein here. I'm gonna read it out, the link. It is MGOBLUEDOT.COM/POD/CASTEN/QU-RINGDASH-HEROES-1333-RONNESTIN-1204. Eastern Michigan Baseball, May 10th. I attended the EMU baseball game at Allstrike Stadium versus Bowling Green. Eastern won 10-9. Go Eagles! I noticed something in the outfield, some sort of memorial. Later, I found that it was dedicated to former player Michael Sacha. Eastern will never forget him, and they pay tribute to him with this image. He was a player in 2007-08, and after graduating, he was Kid Rock's personal assistant. He passed away in 2016 in Nashville, Tennessee, due to an ATV accident. Let's give a moment of silence to Michael. Thank you. Ground cover readers, and have a good day.
La vida del submarino, en español. En los años 1970, el mundo no conocía la verdadera historia del mal. Un hombre de la edad avanzada como primer ministro de un barco como el Titanic dejó a bordo un niño sin escuela y le puso solamente el nombre de Ramón. Al conocer un significado de la isla, no supo qué hacer con la madre sin cariño al cual abandonó. Las abuelas no supieron qué hacer, solamente callaron. Y al mirar a un padre no comprendieron que solamente miró y cayó.
University of Michigan to rear Meets Resistance to Demands by Jane Riley, ground cover vendor number 611. Days That Live in Infamy, October 7th, 2023. The Islamic Resistance Movement attacks Israel. The Israel-Hamas war begins. May 15, 1948, the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, known as the War of Independence in Israel, and the catastrophe, Nakba in Arabic, in Palestine, begins. June 5, 1967, the six-day war between Israel and the Arab states surrounding it, leaving Israel in control of the Gaza Strip, West Bank, Sinai Peninsula, and Jerusalem, begins. September 11, 2001, Al-Qaeda attacks America, starting the global war on terrorism. Maybe we shouldn't have gone to war after September 11th, said Avi Taknafram, a member of Jewish Voice for Peace, one of over 81 organizations that are part of the University of Michigan Tahrir Coalition. Tahrir, Arabic for liberation, was part of the U of M Gaza Solidarity Encampment on the Diag, April 22nd through May 21st, protesting the Israel-Hamas war. The acronym is Transparency, Accountability, Humanity, Reparations, Investment, and Resistance. A lot of Jewish people in America have come to the understanding that war and genocide anywhere ultimately is a crime against people everywhere, said Taknafram, a 2022 U of M Bachelor of Science honors graduate in math and computer science. Taknafram is a media liaison for JVP and Tahrir. Palestinian and Israeli civilians want statehood and self-determination. Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar says his sole mission is to destroy Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who vehemently rejects Palestine statehood, wants to destroy Hamas, considered a terrorist group by the United States and Israel, but not by the United Nations Security Council. Hamas protects us, said a group of men singing from the river to the sea along South University Avenue after May 21st. Hamas gets its weapons from Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, and Bulgaria. For America to be an ally, both Palestine and Israel need to choose separate democracies. Egypt's border is controlled by Hamas and one Egyptian government-controlled company. All other borders in the vicinity are closed. The company charges a fee to enter. The current rate is $5,000 per adult and $2,500 per child, plus documentation, passports, and visas. Egypt is taking in about $1.3 million daily. It also controls humanitarian aid into Gaza. The United Kingdom, America, and the United Nations are providing aid by land, air, and the Mediterranean Sea. My family is not looking to, quote, escape, unquote, said Miriam O'Day, a fifth-year student at the U of M Ford School for Public Policy. O'Day's uncle, aunt, cousins, and grandparents live in the West Bank. It is home. O'Day also is a Tahrir spokesperson. Tahrir said it protested outside the University Board of Regents' homes May 15th because the regents refused to listen to its demands and meet. The coalition posts on social media that it is being harassed by the police. Tahrir posted a video of members peacefully protesting outside the U of M Museum of Art May 3rd, while the state police peacefully rode bicycles. The next segment shows the protesters with the police bicycles. Then the police handcuffed one protester. Police pushed everyone else back with metal barriers. One protester was pushed to the ground by the barrier, and one police officer spraying chemicals on protesters. Volunteers at the encampment said eight protesters were ticketed for trespassing. More than 40 protesters from the U of M Students Allied for Freedom and Equality, acronym SAFE, were cited for trespassing. November 17th, 2023, for being inside the Ruth Finn Administration Building after hours. Four are facing felony charges for allegedly assaulting or attempting to disarm the police. The university police are a daily presence all year. The encampment was cited for fire hazards May 17th. U of M President Santa Ono ordered evacuation by police at 5 a.m. May 21st for noncompliance. The protesters said the hazard was blocking the Diag. The protesters' demands for the divestment from Israel of U of M's $17.9 billion endowment has been turned down. The regents say less than one-tenth of 1% of the endowment is invested indirectly in Israeli companies. That is $17.9 million. Since 2017, Michigan is one of 38 states that have a law that is interpreted to forbid state contracts with anyone who supports divestment from Israel. The word Israel does not appear in the Act 526 or 527 of 2016 as published. However, according to the Brandeis Center, these measures condemn national origin discrimination by the anti-Israeli boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, acronym BDS. According to the acts, the provisions don't apply if the boycott is based on bona fide business or economic reasons, or to a boycott against a public entity of a foreign state when the boycott is applied in a non-discriminatory manner. U of M has a 501c3 nonprofit tax-exempt status. U of M can turn down donations. In 1978, the regents created a policy to create an ad hoc committee of the university senate, students, administration, and alumni when issues involving serious moral or ethical questions might require deviation from the normal investment policy. All regents meetings include time for public comment. There are five regents meetings remaining in 2024, June 20th, July 18th, September 19th and December 5th in Ann Arbor, and October 17th in Flint. There is also an email option. Many students, faculty, employees, and staff have asked for oversight of the endowment at least since 2014, as reported by the Detroit Free Press. The encampment calls it, quote, a people's audit. U of M Finance posts a consolidated annual report. There is no individual endowment investment listing. Tahrir obtained part of the endowment investment listing through a Freedom of Information Act. An oversight of the Investment Advisory Committee was created because of the Free Press investigation. The encampment also demands a boycott of Israeli academic institutions and abolishing campus policing. President Ono and the regents have endorsed an unarmed, non-police emergency response. After May 15th, the regents said they would, quote, not defund the police. Both can exist. Tahrir adds, conduct a formal inquiry into anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, and Islamophobic racism and harassment, and release a formal statement that clearly defines the massacre in Gaza as a genocidal ethnic cleansing campaign led by Israel and aided by the United States. This struggle is not just solely and entirely a struggle to achieve something for Palestine, although it very much is, Technofram said. It is also a struggle that brings all of us together in Southeast Michigan and a much broader area in the globe that really care about justice.
Then and now, reflections on Diag Encampment. Life has a way to make you listen to lies, to believe those lies, and act upon them. How, you say, is this possible? Well, folks, the way I see it, as we forge forward, we tend to be blinded by a faulty memory. I remember, or no, it happened like this, or he remembers it like that. So is it just that we remember things differently, or is it much more? I believe that it is much, much more about where we met, how we met, what we were doing when we met. How could we get it so wrong? I want so much out of others, so I start believing things that are not true, just to be with them. Breaking down things that would not break. Speaking about our leaders, their leaders, and world opinion. It was 2014, and I had a menial job at the local car wash. Every morning on my way to work, I would stop and have my coffee at our local gas station. One of the few places open at 6 in the morning, and had my morning coffee with a mirror. We would talk, and this developed into a true friendship. And one morning, Amir asked if I would come to work for him at the station. I was immediately accepted, and from the moment on, I felt like a true member of the family. His sister, Malik, made me feel like a family member, which I so desperately needed at that point in my life. I remember being trusted and, yes, also loved. To be taken in made a profound impact on me. I watched my life begin to change, all because of my life with my new friends. Then came COVID, which changed my life drastically, but that's a different story. This is just the background for my opinions today. Ann Arbor, the hub of liberalism, is the place where social change is in our DNA. And rising up in times of political upheaval is in our very existence. I see it on the streets every day. But I also see other things as well. Our spirit is being crushed and manipulated by what I call the status quo. And I see a group of bad businessmen banding together and supporting it with vigor. Because we all see it. Now what does this have to do with the student protests in a world that is getting turned upside down? The homeless and the poor could identify with these young people. These visitors to our camp, to the camp, might not know the issues very well. They know big hearts when they see them. And let me tell you, they saw plenty of them. And knowing the people, they took time to try and know the issues. I wandered into a camp, and I was taken back in time to my foray into political activism at this very campus. The issues were different, but the love and fellowship was the same. I saw townies gravitating towards this place, and the admiration I saw and heard was amazing. What I learned is that just like then, back in the day, love is the most powerful tool we have in our tool bag. And it also gave the townies a chance to get the protester side of the story. So the most I can take away from this experience is that I had a chance to meet people who were kind and loving and who would be an asset to any community. I, for one, am glad I had the opportunity to learn that love is still the answer to a lot of the world's problems. And I found an abundance of it at the camp at the University of Michigan with people who are heroes, not enemies. I found the people at the encampment to be a ray of sunshine in a world of turmoil. What's going to happen next? I have no idea. I know with young people like this, the future is a little bit brighter.
The War in Gaza Comes to Ann Arbor by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor 490. Understanding Zionism is the key to understanding the war on Palestine today. The call for a homeland for Jews has roots in the 19th century European anti-Semitism with its many pogroms over the centuries. Targeted as the murderers of Christ and blamed for the bubonic plague and whatever problems of the time, Jews were especially at risk beyond the pale, the common phrase for beyond the ghetto. Zionism was more popular with European elites than among European Jews. Zionist Israel was promoted as the solution to the Jewish problem in Europe, and the World War II Holocaust was the excuse to implement the Balfour Declaration of support for a Jewish state in Palestine. The first Balfour Declaration is of World War I origin, vintage, as the British led the way in the partitioning of the Ottoman Empire. The British left Palestine in 1948 and set up Zionist Israel to take their place. It is another settler colonial project. South Africa knows a lot about apartheid settler colonialism. Look at their presentation to the International Criminal Court to understand the current genocide. Israel and its allies, especially the United States, dispute the court's opinion. The United States does not want the court to look at its war crimes and is now putting sanctions on the court. The world is the final judge. Study Edward Said for a better understanding. The context of every war is financial and ideological. The ideology of supremacism is part of the imperialist era as it superseded the colonial model of supremacism. Imperialism's financial sophistication organizes the cash flow to the ruling class, which uses the wealth to buy political power, organize coup d'etats, civil wars, anything to promote wealth supremacism. It has been very lucrative. The great gap of wealth and power concentration is built on endless war on the working class, especially in the Third World. Today, Palestine is the front line of this war, and all settler colonial states unite around Israel. Many young people see the writing on the wall and know that a better future requires organized participation, which begins with divestment from genocide. The many actions around the world to support Palestine include numerous camps on U.S. college campuses. The Diag at the University of Michigan became one of these liberated zones on Earth Day, April 22, 2024. Our People's Peace Bank meeting was postponed so we could all go to the camp. It was immediately clear that this was a well-planned and organized phenomenon. There were tents for everything, medics, literature, wonderful and plentiful food, educational presentations and meetings. Prayer was part of the camp. The Diag had become a sacred space. More than once I sat down and was in communion with one or more people as we shared the struggle for freedom from our lived experience. I got some Tibetan prayer flags which were displayed at the volunteers' tent. The global war machine is built on wealth supremacism, and donors to politicians went on the offensive to demand that they shut down the camps on campuses. The chain of command responded. With orders which were followed by campus, state, and municipal police who hold the legal monopoly on violence. The war in Gaza came to the Diag early Tuesday morning, May 21st. Orders were given to leave the camp, which was immediately trashed. Did the prayer flags end up in the dumpster? The Nuremberg Code was not considered. The Israeli-Palestinian Confederation is planning sessions on questions such as, is anti-Zionism anti-Semitic? Since Arabs are Semites, I consider Zionists to be anti-Semitic. If you are Palestinian, you know about Zionist supremacism and the deadly results. Liberal Ann Arbor tolerated to camp on the Dag for 1 month before the dogs of war were unleashed. People are recuperating and court dates are pending. Search Tahrir Coalition to learn more. There are 81 U of M groups in the coalition. Follow up and follow through. I met a number of wonderful people whom I hope to meet again. Stay with the prayers that deepen our solidarity with primordial life. Breathe power. The struggle continues. The last weekend in May had a People's Conference on Palestine in Detroit. Organized by the Palestinian Youth Movement, over 3,500 people registered for a high-energy summit. Surround the White House on June 8th and demand an immediate ceasefire, an immediate end to the siege of Gaza, freedom for all Palestinian prisoners, and an end to the occupation of Palestine.
Abolitionists and activists rally for moms in jail on Mother's Day. By Jim Clark, Ground Cover Vendor, number 139. On a warm spring afternoon at Huron Valley Correctional Facility in Ypsilanti, there was a gathering of activists, neighbors, and family members of inmates. About 100 people formed a demonstration line along Bemis Road across from the prison. It was Mother's Day, and Crystal Clark, a mother of four, is one of the inmates. I spoke to four individuals, to Rhonda Clark, Kat Layton, Andrew, and Lark, who represent a cross-section of people who are not caught up in the prison system, but who are greatly affected by it. To Rhonda Clark. I met Rhonda Clark with her 8-month-old son, Prince, and 3 cousins. I asked her, "What brought you to the event?" She replied, "Today they are having a Mother's Day rally for the women who are incarcerated, who are not receiving proper health care or proper treatment behind bars. One of the inmates that is in there who has been speaking out and that has been getting retaliated against is my sister, Crystal Clark. 14 years ago, Crystal picked up a family member who asked for a ride. What Crystal didn't know was the family member had committed a crime and was fleeing the scene. Crystal was arrested for being an accessory to the crime. She was pregnant at the time. Her child was born in prison. Taronda and her family have been raising and caring for the child ever since. I asked, how much longer will Crystal be in prison? Taronda replied, right now, I think it's still like 3+ or more years that she has to do. And honestly, the way her health has been declining, we don't know if she has that much time. Anytime she tells them something that is going on with her, they just totally disregard it. I asked, how did you get involved with the people who staged the event? My sister reached out to me and told me that she has been receiving numerous supports from different people from all over the world, and they were putting together an event, and she wanted me to drive down from North Carolina to meet some of the people. I don't know much about them, but I know they have to have a big heart to come out and support someone they don't know. To hear her story, to hear what she's going through, and then take time away from their day, away from their mother or away from their children, and coming and supporting someone you don't know says a lot about you. That's powerful. What are they trying to accomplish? I asked. Taronda replied, I think personally the goal is for everyone to be treated as human beings, to be treated with dignity, to be treated with respect, regardless of what walk in life you have, regardless of what mistakes you have made, still to be treated human. A lot of women there have not taken anyone's lives or anything. My sister didn't. My sister has been here for 14 years and her health has steadily deteriorated. We get numerous calls. My sister doesn't even look like herself. She has mold growing out of her body, and no one feels like that's important. The prison gets money for them being there. We pay for them being there, so give them the proper health care that they need. I asked if there was anything she wanted to add. Taronda replied, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has been supporting her and who continues to support her. For more information on how to support Crystal Clark, see the February 9th, 2024 edition of Ground Cover News. Kat Layton. Kat Layton, who is running for County Commissioner in District 6, said this about turning out for the rally. Today, I am here in solidarity with many parents, loved ones, and mothers of people who are incarcerated in the Women's Huron Valley Prison. I appreciate seeing people here today standing together and standing for what is right and what is just, and that is freeing people from these systems of harm and freeing these people from systems of oppression. The conditions of the prison are historically not good, and people are dying at disproportionate rates. Layton believes it is time to use government funds for building healthy communities as opposed to maintaining a broken system. We are interrupted by people chanting, "End mass incarceration," and "Free Crystal Clark." I did the Day of Empathy a few years ago, where we talked to different legislatures about ending the practice of leaving people in shackles when giving birth and of having their child ripped away from their hands the moment that they do give birth. It's very traumatic, Layton added. She speaks from authority as she graduated with a degree in human development. She continued, "Having a child born in prison is traumatic to the mother, the child, and the community. It damages family connections, and it damages community connections. It's all interrelated. It's all connected," she says. A common question people have about abolition is, if we abolish prisons, what will we do with all the criminals? Layton challenged the assumption. According to her, we don't often think of abolition as something we build as opposed to something we destroy. She believes it is imperative to think through what we can build that is new, so that one day we can start relying less on those systems of oppression. Abolition doesn't happen overnight, but it starts with the basics: respite centers, housing, education opportunities, and access to medical care. Layton concluded, "It's all of the things that are truly investing in the community. We will have less people perpetuating harm because there's no harm being perpetuated on them. A sense of community also leads to crime prevention, because to be part of a healthy community is to have people who love you and support you and also put you in check if you behave counter to cultural expectations. According to Layton, accountability is community." To learn more about Day of Empathy, visit dream.org, Day of Empathy. Andrew. A young father named Andrew was there with his wife and 6-month-old son. When asked about his connection to the gathering, he replied that his wife was a member of the hosting organization, the Michigan General Defense Committee. Andrew is a big fan of the GDC's advocacy and outreach to the homeless in our county. That work drew him to this event. I asked him how he felt about abolition. "It needs to be done," he said. "It needs to be done immediately. The conditions that our prisons are in are inhumane, to say the least. There's got to be another way." I asked, "How do you think we should go about abolishing prisons?" Andrew replied, "It is going to take something big, some cataclysmic style of events that turns public opinion against prisons. Because I think right now the general popular opinion is that prisons are something that can be reformed and changed and kind of shifted, when in reality it's the idea of prison that has to go." Lark. As I meandered through the crowd, I saw a sign that contained a piece of the abolition puzzle. Lark, from the Lansing General Defense Committee, had a beautifully made cardboard sign that said "Community, not incarceration." An artist who tried cardboard as canvas for the first time, Lark usually does collages and other styles of art for personal fulfillment. They are a member of GDC and came out to support the GDC Abolitionists Working Group. According to abolitionists, prisons and incarceration are harmful to the community. If incarceration happens because there is a breakdown of community, then the alternative to incarceration is to build stronger communities. To end the prison system, humans must have a safe, stable, and supportive environment where all of their needs are met. Basic needs of food and shelter are essential, but do not end there. Humans need opportunities to grow, to express themselves, to be heard, to be important to the community, and to be accountable to their peers. Making sure those needs are met, the entire spectrum, may be the way to end the need for incarceration. To get a picture of the Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility sign, I had to walk across Bemis Road to get closer. As soon as my foot met the lawn, the guard challenged me. "Get off the property," the guard yelled. It reminded me of when I was a kid, the angry old man next door shouting, "Get off my lawn!" I asked him if he would answer some questions. He said no. On my way home, I thought about my own mother. I imagined her getting arrested and sentenced to 14 plus years in prison. In 1972, I was 5 years old. My dad was in the army, and we had to move across the country. Even at 5 years, I knew this meant never seeing my friends again. A five-year-old is capable of understanding that their mother will be locked away and that they will never see them again. To a child, 14 years isn't just forever. It's inconceivable. I remember wailing and sobbing for hours as we drove from Michigan to New York. I remember feeling homesick for my grandmother for weeks. What if the thing that was taken from me wasn't my childhood home, but my own mother? My development as a human being would suffer. It is well known that physical contact between mother and child is essential for life. If my mother had been imprisoned, I would never know her touch or affection as a child. I would never have her to soothe my wounds, or her hugs and kisses to celebrate my successes, or her hand to show me tough love. Then I realized that is exactly what is happening to Crystal Clark's children and to every other son and daughter whose mother is incarcerated.
I'm Teresa Bender 570. This poem is called Not. I know love isn't easy. I know you'll always be my sweet baby. I'll always be your lady. I also know I'm not sleazy. I don't hustle for money, nor do I hustle for a man. Don't need a handout. That's without a doubt. I'm not like those others you're used to. I'm a different breed that came from another seed.
Undercover Art Intel, Ipsy Pottery Creations, Cindy Gear. Ground cover vendor number 279. On a crisp fall day, I walked into this small but quaint store filled with pre-made ceramic molds. I was fascinated with the many varieties and kinds of molds. There were plates, bowls, and cups, but also vases and Christmas ornaments. What made me go wow were the animals, including my favorite, a peacock, and many mythical and enchanted unicorns and fairies. As I walked around the store, Glaze Studio, I was looking at the molds, and I saw Christmas and Jewish molds, as well as molds from other religions. Holidays were represented as well, such as Halloween, Thanksgiving, Easter, and Christmas. Hanukkah was also shown. It felt so inviting to see such a representation of what this nation truly is about. Two women happened to show up, and both picked out two items. One was a vase and the other a plate. I watched as they picked out the glaze colors for their items. One talked about doing a Japanese spring cherry blossom on her vase with pink and green. I myself picked out a small, cute owl. I named him Hootie. As I painted him, I found the paint to be very thick. This was to make sure the glaze was going to truly stay on and shine. I gave the item back to Toby, the owner of Glaze Studio, to fire it for many hours at 2,000 degrees, and then let it cool for 14 to 20 hours and dry before picking it up 10 days later. The store appeals to people of all ages, although children have to clearly be accompanied and supervised by an adult. Other surprising things is the variety of get-togethers at Glaze, such as AA groups for sobriety, baby showers, and women's groups. The space is for people across all spectrums to come and experience a new but old form of art. Each person picks out 4 or 5 paint colors. Glaze has sparkling colors with glass and plain colors as well, and other kinds of muted or plain colors. There are 50 available total. Toby's Glaze store is located at 54 North Huron Street in downtown Ipsy. This was my first time getting to know Glaze, as it is a fairly new business. What drew me here was very clear. All the white clay pre-slip molds that dried solid and ready for painting. How did this all start? Well, it began in the 1970s during the heyday of the hippie era. The creating molds, many artists had kilns in their backyards, and this was about free love and sharing art in large groups. What Toby told me was people would come together and do art in large groups and family events. It was a very different age. What I discovered was a whole past of pre-made molds created in the 1970s. This world started out with people who owned and operated kilns out of the love of the process and end result. When they started getting families and friends together in parties and gatherings for the love of taking a solid item home that could be placed on one's mantle to show off to the world. Toby loved collecting the molds made of plaster of Paris. She realized this dying art form was yet another perfect opportunity. Toby had an inspired vision to bring back old art into a new age of public consciousness. This all happened with the encouragement of her children. They told her, "Think of it, Mom. Paint your own pottery shop for other kids like us." Toby transitioned from being in the corporate world of web design and computer graphics to open the Glaze store in January and February of 2023. "When I first opened my doors," Toby told me, "the community support and outpour was extreme. There truly is an art community in Ipsy that rivals Ann Arbor. There are many ways to express art, and to me, with people who feel they had no talent in art, this is the most open, inviting, and exploration in art there is. I myself plan to take my family to experience this wonderful shop. So take a small day trip to the Glaze shop and discover a wonderful new form of old art. My next endeavor will be a real dragon for the year of the dragon we are in. Kung Fu Panda."